Sylvia Plath's collection of poems, Ariel, has never gone out of print. It's been devoured by Plath's admirers since it was published nearly 40 years ago. Poet Robert Lowell once called Ariel the autobiography of a fever, poems written by a passionate, pained, and occasionally mad young woman. Among her most shocking, those that raged against a long-dead father and a womanizing husband, like this one, Daddy, where she calls them vampires. Sylvia Plath in 1962, reading the closing lines.
Daddy, you can lie back now. There's a stake in your fat black heart, and the villagers never liked you. They are dancing and stamping on you. They always knew it was you. Daddy, daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
Not long after writing those words, Sylvia Plath tucked her two tiny children in bed, sealed their door with towels, rested her head on her oven door, and turned on the gas. She left behind a completed collection of poems titled Ariel. In publishing this manuscript after her suicide, Plath's husband, the poet Ted Hughes, took it upon himself to edit the work. The Ariel that became famous was missing a dozen poems Hughes felt were too painful. Over the years, Ted Hughes was vilified by legions of Plath's fans for hurting both the poet and the poetry. Now, a restored edition of Ariel has been published exactly as Sylvia Plath left it, and her daughter, Frieda Hughes, has written a foreword.
People criticized him for having touched or arranged anything, but also, you see, the environment in which the criticism happened was, you know, somehow in her death she was perfect, but it was the death that was perfect, and everything associated with the death must be perfect and somehow sacred. My father once asked me, he said, "You must be awfully angry, Frieda, that your mother left you the way she did." And I had to be honest with him, it had never occurred to me, because my attitude had always been, if one could understand her pain, one can also understand that the pain does not necessarily come from other people. Understanding her suicide was also trying to understand the ferocity of her emotions as they must have been. I mean, most of us have experienced ferocious emotions at one time or another during our lives. But from what I understand, she battled with them constantly. You can see them in the emotions in the Ariel poems.
You were quite young when your mother committed suicide. How did your father present your mother to you as you were growing up?
I would have to say, when I was very young in particular, his description of her and depiction of her was angelic. I mean, I thought of her as an angel, and he used to talk about her. Being an angel at my bedside. But also when he spoke about her, I mean, there were anecdotes, sometimes little things, sometimes just the way she'd fold her ribbons and colour coordinate them in the drawer, because he used to watch me colour coordinating things and arranging things, and he'd say, "You know, your mother used to do that in the same way." And so for me, she was almost too perfect as I grew up, and it wasn't until I was in my teens and I began to think, well, surely she can't have been that perfect. And was rather, in a way, relieved to find out that my mother did have a temper and she could be jealous, and it made her much more normal and tangible also, in a way.
I have your introduction from me, and it was interesting. You write that your father played your mother's records to you, because...
Well, he just once, I have to say, just to hear her voice. And I was so astonished, because I'd always imagined her to have an English accent. And I was, as a child, I sat there thinking, that can't be my mother. That is my mother. Oh, my goodness. And I remember my sense of complete awe and shock as I had to recalibrate this very English-speaking angel in my head to become now an American-speaking angel.
When I looked at my old, I'm looking at it right now, at my copy of Ariel, I hadn't realized until now that it was dedicated to Frieda and Nicholas, and that would, of course, be you and your brother.
My brother. Mm.
And the first poem is Morning Song, and I'm wondering if you would be comfortable reading it.
I could read it, yes. I've always declined to read my mother's poetry because I felt that it was hers and should remain so in her voice, if you like. But yes, I'll try and read it for you. Morning Song. Love set you going like a fat gold watch. The midwife slapped your footsoles, and your bald cry took its place among the elements. Our voices echo, magnifying your arrival. New statue in a drafty museum. Your nakedness shadows our safety. We stand round blankly as walls. I'm no more your mother than the cloud that distills a mirror to reflect its own slow effacement at the wind's hand. All night your moth breath flickers among the flat pink roses. I wake to listen. A far sea moves in my ear. One cry and I stumble from bed, cow heavy and floral in my Victorian nightgown. Your mouth opens, clean as a cat's. The window square whitens and swallows its dull stars. And now you try your handful of notes. The clear vowels rise like balloons.
Obviously one of the most, the saddest aspects of your mother's death, not too long after she wrote this poem. It was made so much sadder by the image of two children sleeping and protected by your mother. Do you read this as a poem about her capacity to love?
For me, it's funny because I read it, and it's very odd when you're reading a poem about yourself, because it gives one a rather inverted sensation. Yes, I do think it's about love, and I think it's also just an encapsulation of the whole ball of love in that one moment in the dawn, the reality of the cry and the mother's answer to the cry, and the larger picture represented by something very pared down and simple, which actually is, I think, what the best poetry is about.
Artist and poet Frida Hughes has written the foreword for the restored edition of Ariel, a collection of poems by her mother, Sylvia Plath.